Well, we're back, and this segment of the show is brought to you by ShoreCruise.com, your online cruise superstore, and in part by USA 3000 Airlines, offering low-cost fares from St. Petersburg, Fort Lauderdale, Fort Myers, and Orlando. And I'm pleased to have author Taddy McAllister with us today, a friend and a gal with a wanderlust, which just happens to be the name of a book she has written. Good morning to you, Taddy.
Good morning.
Well, I was just thinking that, you know, who would have thought after all these years our next conversation would be on live radio broadcasting to the world?
Well, Roy, I wouldn't put anything past you.
But how wonderful it is. You know, what I'd like to do, Ted, is I'd like to touch on some of the sections of your book, and then, if you will, I'd like to chat a bit about a terrific speech you made at the Soulgrave Club in Washington. And I was just really staggered by the, first of all, the amount of traveling you have done over the years, and also that you've recorded it all in a journal and put it into a book phone. How marvelous is that?
Well, it has been my joy to do it. I find that when I travel, knowing that I'm going to be writing about it, it really makes me focus. And it enhances my trip. Some people think that it looks like work, but to me, it is just a joy.
Well, and then, you know, you're right. I think you've even mentioned in your book that if you write this down as you go, or if you haven't, other people have said it, and then you go back to these, it brings back a lot of great memories and just wonderful adventures.
Well, it certainly brings back memories, but the act of writing itself makes everything seem to be outlined in neon for me, because I'm putting words into the images, and for some reason it's the most focused I ever am. So it's great fun for me.
Well, let's just, if we can, it would take us a month, which I'd really love anyway, to go through this whole book. But there are a couple of things that I think some are obviously are very amusing, and a couple of people have always wanted to do. But I think it was either in Nepal or India, the ride on the elephant through the jungle. Tell us just a moment about that, if you will.
Yes, that was at Tiger Tops in Nepal, actually, and I'm sure that many other people have done this, but it's amazing to ride on a real working elephant through what they call elephant grass, and you see why when you go through it, because it's about 25 feet tall. And come on rhinos and see monkeys swinging through the trees and so forth. I went down to the elephant camp the next morning, and there was a tiny baby elephant. I reached across the rope to touch it on the head, and the mahout said, "Don't touch him, because you cannot be nice to an elephant that you're training."
I thought that was very interesting. In fact, I was going to bring that subject up. I had mentioned it to my oldest daughter when we were talking about horses and how they get attached to you, and they're like children. And so the point he made is a very valid point, I guess, but one I was certainly never aware of.
Right. Well, if your animal is going to weigh several tons, you've got to be in control of it.
Now, let's go to China and the Great Wall.
Uh-huh. Well, I went to China in 1982. It had been open for about 4 or 5 years at that point, but it was still very primitive, and there were still relatively few tourists there. So it was great fun to see. I've been back since then and seen the enormous changes that have come with their form of capitalism globalization.
I don't think people realize that this wall is 30 feet high.
Oh, it's like a building. It's not a wall. It's 30 feet high, and it's about 30 feet across.
Right, and 3,600 miles long.
Yeah. I subsequently, years later, saw the tail end of the wall way out in the western part of China, and it didn't look anything like the wall at Beijing, but it was you know, people have been building walls to keep other people out, and it's so senseless that they look like follies. Now, we're glad to have ancient follies, but I think that we should stop building walls now that we figured out they don't work.
Yeah, well, we can't keep our borders closed, so why should we be building walls? You then went to Egypt. Well, I'm not doing this in any particular sequence, but there was you mentioned was it the Karnak Temple? And the statement you made is that passing mud walls and mud brick huts, and the next minute, you're looking at rows of broken sphinxes, and it takes you a second or two to realize that you've gone from everyday to the extraordinary, which happens to be right next door to the everyday. I thought that was a marvelous statement.
Oh, thank you. Well, that was true in Egypt, and I've subsequently seen that in other desert cultures that use the architecture of mud. The architecture of mud does not last, and so and it's always the same color as the land, because obviously they're just using the dirt.
Exactly.
So it's in Egypt, you do just come on a ruin without realizing, because it's so organic.
Now, one of my favorite places that I've spent quite a bit of time in, that you've also covered in your book, is the Sea of Cortez in Baja,
yes.
California.
In fact, I was just writing an encomium for the guide that we had on this particular trip, two trips to the Sea of Cortez, a man named Larry Hobbs, who's a very, very special naturalist. And it was making me think about the Sea of Cortez just before we went on the air. The last trip that I made to the Sea of Cortez, the ship left the Sea of Cortez and went out into the Pacific to Magdalena Bay, and we saw literally hundreds of whales and baby whales. So we were very lucky, because sometimes I've understood that people go on those trips and never see a whale.
Well, the Sea of Cortez, now, of course, you can go both sides. As you say, you can go on the Pacific side, or you can go on the into the Sea of Cortez. My experience has mostly been in the Sea of Cortez, and I've actually been out in those little, what they call pongas, those little wooden fishing boats, where whales have actually surfaced next to that. The most startling thing I ever saw. You could just only reach out and touch them. I mean, how exciting is that?
The last trip that I made, 2004, to Magdalena Bay, I was in a panga with the captain of our ship, and we were down on our knees with our hands in the water, and a whale head came up right next to us, and we could touch it.
Amazing.
And it is like a car rising out of the water. It is so big.
And it's just marvelous. That whole Sea of Cortez, of course, is a great... it's attracted many people from the Silicon Valley area, and I think that's what's really made it popular over the years. But in the beginning, it was people like Bing Crosby, who started had a small hotel in Cabo, and the celebrities used to go down there because it was away from everything and nobody knew about it. In fact, we used to fly in there into little places like Mulegé and Loreto. And in Mulegé, you could land at the Serenidad Hotel on a dirt strip, and we used to go in there in a DC-3, and the whole town would come out. You'd think it was a 747. We'd chase the cows off the runway so we could land. But it's a marvelous, marvelous, marvelous place, and I'm so glad that you've got to spend some time there, and not just at Cabo San Lucas itself, where, you know, naturally now there's lots of big hotels, but there's so much, much more around.
Yes, there is. In fact, Cabo is something of a disappointment now, because it's so overrun with people and T-shirt shops and souvenir stands and yachts and so forth. But I understand in the old days it was really neat.
And I think places like Laredo are still okay, and Mulahe, the Johnsons have had that hotel for years, and in fact he's, I think, the honorary U.S. ambassador, or U.S. consul, I guess you would call it, to Baja California, and they're really a nice family. Let's just get to your let's get to your letter, or your speech actually, that you gave at the Soulgrave Club, and it was a very, very interesting talk because it touched on so many important subjects, and the fact of getting out there and seeing things, not just reading about them, and how important that was.
Well, I gave that speech about maybe 2 or 3 years ago at the when the terrorism was still fairly new, a fairly new fact of life for travelers. I mean, not that it hadn't been going on, but I meant since 9/11. And I gave that speech almost in anguish over what terrorism had done to travel and how it had truncated people's plans and how it had scared people off from going into other cultures, and particularly Arab cultures. I'm fascinated by Arab culture. I've been in several Arab countries, several Muslim countries, and I would go back to all the rest of them.
Exactly. And I think that's very much you know, the point you make in this. I mean, you talk about, yes, you study and you research where you're going, and find out a lot more about the countries you're going to visit. But there's nothing like just getting out there and seeing the reality of it all. And the statement you make, which I like, is I like to travel to places that make me step outside myself.
Yeah. Well, the more exotic, the better, as far as I'm concerned. Although almost any travel away from home, I think, makes you step outside yourself because you're outside your safety zone and you're outside of what you know.
And one of the other statements you make is people say, well, hey, why don't they just paint these places and fix them up? Well, you know, come on. I mean, they can barely feed themselves.
Right.
The last thing they're worried about is paint. They want a roof over their head.
I know, and I'm afraid that I'm something of a Victorian romanticist in that I love the decay and the old things. And I don't really want them to paint and Disney-fy everything.
Well, I've seen
that. They may need a little restoration to keep some place from simply falling down around their ears.
But I think that, you know, sometimes the American mentality is everybody should live in a big white house with a white picket fence around it. When people have been living in these barrios for years, they're quite happy, they can cook outside. And I've seen it happen in the Virgin Islands. People go in, they change all of this, they tear down the barrios, they build these apartment buildings, give them an apartment, and the next thing you know is you have a ghetto.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes if we just leave it alone and understand that people have their own right to live the way they want to live, and as long as it isn't killing people off and there are horrible, you know, horrific problems, you know, let it be. It's been that way for thousands of years. We're the newcomers on the block.
Well, the other thing that you learn when you're in a culture like that is looking back at our country, and I'm sure that many people have come from abroad and looked at our country, and you see how immensely, inconceivably wealthy our country is, and how idiotic it is for us to poor mouth to the world.
That's
because
exactly.
we have so much in this country that it's just staggering compared to everybody else, and I'm talking about even Western Europe.
Right. We take it all for granted.
Yeah.
Teddy, great book. The book is called Wonder.
What do you call?
Wonderlust. I just turned around. I laid it down on the counter. Great book. We'll have it up on our website, and I just think you did a marvelous job. And let's chat from time to time, and we can get more in depth in some of these travels that you've done, and I think it would be lots of fun.
I'd love to, Roy. It's great talking to you. You can get my books at Amazon.com.
Okay. You got that all. Amazon.com, a great book. Highly recommend it. Patty, it was great. We've got to run and hope to talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
Bye for now. Patty McAllister, great gal. We got to go to break. We'll run a little